Talk. It's the second and final hour of 702 Afternoons with myself, Relebogile Maboja, and we have been looking forward to this because your last time, the masterclass on elections part one was quite busy, and we spent quite a bit of time really trying to understand the absolute basics. Well, this is part two. We're going to continue on the subject of what makes these elections different. Masikole Boy, lecturer at Rhodes University, political scientist and analyst, will be joining us again for this conversation. So get in touch, give us a call, 011-883-0702. Your SMS is 31702, your tweets at Relebogile M at Radio 702 using the hashtag 702 Afternoons, and the WhatsApp line 072-702-1702.
702.
Masterclass.
Masterclass time again, and he joins us on part two of what makes these elections different on the masterclass on the elections. If you missed part one, please head over to primemediaplus.com, download the app, and you can catch up on that conversation. Joining us again, Masikole Boy, lecturer at Rhodes University, political scientist and analyst. Masikole, welcome back. How are you doing?
Good afternoon, Relebogile, and good afternoon to your viewers. I'm doing fine. Thanks. How are you?
I feel like I am good, and I feel like after the show, I'm sure your brain was in pain at the realization of the confusion of something that, you know, somebody at your level who lives in this world completely understand.
Yeah, I mean, there's not been much work that has been done to do some education from IEC and political parties, I mean, to ensure this three-ballot system that is new to South Africans is publicized but also engaged. I mean, I think by now citizens are realizing that there is a new ballot system and in relation to independent candidates. I mean, people are talking about it now, but I think so far we are doing a good work to at least to take it out there.
And I think it is bit by bit as we are making our way there. So in the first part, we truly spent a little bit of time talking about the different ballots, the difference between regions and all of those things. I wanted to pick up today, because we're talking about what makes these elections different from the last ones, specifically around independent candidates. We touched on it, but we never really got to the details of if Relebogile woke up and decided she wants to be an independent candidate. Take us back in the timeline from the time they announced, what the conditions were for you to be an independent candidate, and when those dates closed, to where we are now. Because I saw a clip of social media. One of the independent candidates was walking up. I cannot recall what the scenario was, but each time it was an IEC thing. Each time a party was going up, they would put the logo. And she went up and she said, I'm not going to speak because my photograph is not there. And at the time, some people completely were like treating it like it's petty. But I completely understood what she was saying, is that if this is going to be free and fair, and I, as an independent candidate, you ask for my photograph, I sent it through. Now when I'm getting my opportunity, it is not being put up. I think for a good 2 to 3 minutes, she was complaining, saying, I'm not going to start speaking until one of the panel members got up to say, our extreme apologies. We erred in that manner and we will rectify, but can we continue? Which she then did. So take us back and let's work our way forward to how we got here and what independent candidates are entitled to, considering they aren't an organization.
Thank you very much, Relebogile. I mean, the issue of independent candidates, I think firstly, not far different from new political parties. I think the Electoral Act system required them to have 10,000 to 14 signatures. And this is similar to political parties. And you've seen new political parties going around different provinces, trying to mobilize people, but also get trying to get the signatures to ensure that they are registered. And IEC also required the same system for independent candidates, that they must have a particular number of signatures. And we've seen different, and remember, I think there were 14, if not 15 independent candidates that applied. But out of that, the only candidates that we're going to see in that ballot paper, it's 10 candidates. Currently, we have 10 candidates. And most of them, they didn't make some of those signatures which were required by the IEC. Similar to political parties, they were also requested to have those signatures. And so today you follow the case.
Maybe just, I want to just pause on the part of the signatures so that we are all clear and understand. You know, because I can sign a petition online by just putting my name and email address, and that counts. When we say signatures, are we referring to physical signatures that they had to go and get from the public that are the 10,000 or 15,000 with a contactable reference to verify that this is not forged?
Yeah, look, this has been a contentious issue, and I think IEC also responded because there were claims that some political parties submitted fraudulent signatures, and it is both online and also physically. But also the problem, I mean, with, I don't think the IEC have foresaw the situation it happening, is that it doesn't have, I mean, powers or capacity to check the legitimacy of genuine signatures. I mean, they argue that, I mean, IEC argue that theirs is to firstly take the signatures, but to have time and capacity to go through each and every signature to ensure that they call people, these are actual references. I mean, these are actual IDs in reference to what we have given. So we have seen that there is a need from IEC's side to ensure that what is submitted can be checked, can be verified. And per the response of the IEC did argue that, look, they have never thought, thinking about the capacity to each and every signature. And I think for me, it becomes meaningless to say to someone, look, for this job, you need to have a degree. But at the same time, when someone gives a degree, you can't verify whether it's legitimate. So, I mean, this needs to find a way to have a capacity. Because we can see in South Africa that the multi-party system is growing in very exponential numbers. But if we don't have means or system in place to ensure that whatever is submitted is checked, but it's not fraudulent. So it has been a contentious issue. And I argue that they don't have the internal capacity to reflect on some of those issues to ensure that they are legit.
Okay. So in the case of the 10 candidates, how many actually were able to meet the requirements?
I mean the 10 candidates we have now, they've all met the requirements. They're contesting. Four of them will appear on the regional provincial ballot. So they are going to provincial assembly. I think four of them, yes. And the other candidates, they're going to National Assembly. So they are out of the 10. So five is going to Provincial Assembly. The other five of the candidates, they are going to National Assembly out of the 10. And I think it is from Joburg, Limpopo, I think Pui Limpopo, Cape Town. So they are divided in that.
Maskole, I'm not sure if you completed your sentence or if we cut on the other side. Can you just repeat that last line that you said?
I was saying the candidates that we have, which attend them, not five men, sorry, six are going to National Assembly. Mm. And half of them are going to Provincial Assembly. Mm. So the independent candidates we have are divided in province and national.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we continue with this masterclass. It is all about what is different in these elections compared to the ones before. Independent candidates are one of the things we're touching on, but feel free to ask any question of our guests just in regards to what is different in these elections.
702 Masterclass.
And we continue with our masterclass as we are chatting about what makes these elections different. It's part two in our masterclass on elections. We're still with Masekole Boy, our guest lecturer at Rhodes University, political scientist and analyst as well. There was a part one. Head over to primemediaplus.com to take a listen to part one. For today, for part two, we're taking your questions on things that have been missed. Give us a call, 011-883-0702, and the WhatsApp line, 072-702-1702. And those of you sending messages now saying, do the show with Thabo, it's not going. It's not going to happen, but I absolutely love doing crossings with all of my colleagues, Thabo and with John, with Clement, because, you know, we work sometimes in our own teams, but it's such a nice surprise hearing what your colleagues are going to be doing. And then I get to listen and enjoy in the car. All right. Some questions have come through. Masekole, before we jump into those questions, there is more questions again asking for an explanation of the ballot papers. So just to reiterate, three ballot papers. One is for national elections where independent candidates will not be there. That one is going to determine the ruling party and who our president is. Then the second ballot paper is provincial for the seats to be taken up at provincial. And then the provincial one are the ones for National Assembly. I stand to be corrected. And the regional ballot, which is also provincial, is more for provincial assembly. Did I summarize that correctly?
Yes, that's correct, because National Assembly, I mean, there's no independent on that ballot paper. So it's only political parties. And then the regional, which is also called provincial, it includes political parties and independent candidates from various provinces to be represented in National Assembly. And the third one, which is province, is only candidates who are going to be represented in provincial assembly. So they're not going to national parliament, they're going to provincial legislature. So that's correct.
All right. I'm so proud of myself because I was telling Prashida last week, I don't know if I'm more confused or not, but I think the masterclass absolutely helped with getting that answered. So to the person who sent the question on the WhatsApp line, I hope you're covered. Let's go to a voice note.
Good afternoon, Relebogile and your guests. I just like to find out, is there something that the IEC is doing to educate us, the voters, regarding these three ballot papers? We understand the two, which is the national and the provincial. We do understand that. But the regional, till today, the last time I was listening to your show, I still don't understand what I'm voting for in the regional. They told me about the 200 seat in parliament, but can they explain it further on this regional paper? Please. Thank you. Silla from Sakan.
Thank you, Silla. I think we've answered that one. But what I will ask Masekole is, from your perspective, where can people get more information in terms of all the clarity that they need? Is it only by the IEC website? Where are the places that they can do that? And I would advise all of you to obviously stay tuned to 702. EWN covers the stories. Mandy Wiener does a lot of these things, but also Tidi Madia has a podcast called Politricks, and you can take a listen to that, where they go into exceptional detail, not just around elections in general, but also with individuals. So we, as a station, are going to be doing quite a bit of that. But before we get to that point, between now and all of these things happening in between, where can people get information?
Yeah, thank you, Rebelokhila. I mean, I think IEC underestimated the need for political education about this new ballot paper system. I think they've underestimated it. But I mean, to give them credit, they crafted a very short, simple video on their website that explains this process that we're talking about, three ballot papers. I mean, that video captures accurately. But I mean, the problem also in relation to some of this, I mean, not everyone can access online in relation to education. I mean, everything can be online. I mean, in government
website. Also, this is online. I think majority of South African, we know they don't have access, and also the expensiveness of data and going online, listening to a YouTube video. I mean, we know the problem with that. So, I mean, they haven't done enough work on the ground, I mean, to educate people about the ballot. But if you go online randomly, you will find it on their website. It is clearly explained on their short video.
Yes. All right. And I mean, I think it's important what you mentioned. Let's not exclude those that don't have access to videos and things like that. Let's take a listen to another voice note.
A good day, Relebuile. Why these signatures are only required to the new political parties? Why the signatures aren't required to every political party? Because there are political parties, Relebuile, like COOP and the UDM. I don't think that they can even get even 20 signatures. Thanks, David.
Masikole?
I mean, that's an interesting comment. I mean, one can argue that truly, I mean, a declining small political party would also struggle with the signatures. But I mean, the technicality, obviously, once a political party is registered, because they are already registered.
Apologies, Masikole, the network is breaking up on our side. So can you just try and repeat that again? And if we continue to struggle, we'll get you on a better line. Oh, okay. Our network is not behaving. So let us take a break. When we come back, we'll continue with the masterclass. I really don't want us to miss any small piece of information. It is awareness and education for each and every one of us. 702, let's walk the talk.
702, Masterclass.
All right, we're still doing the Masterclass. Masikole Boy, let's test the line.
Yes, I mean, the last caller was asking why old political parties which are declining are not required to have the signatures. I mean, the logic from IEC is to only require or request the signatures to new political parties that have never contested or been part of the paper. So the direct response is that old political parties that have been registered or contested before are not required to do the signatures, even if they are declining. I mean, we see they have few supporters, but they are not required to do the signatures.
Okay, so it's not that it's discriminatory in any ways, because the existing political parties have already proven themselves, in inverted commas.
Yes, that's the logic from IEC.
Okay, so at what point, out of curiosity, what would make a political party be kicked off a ballot? Like, once you've done that process and you're accepted, are there any rules that could say you have broken this rule, therefore you're no longer going to be on the ballot? Because even now with the case that was happening with former President Jacob Zuma and the MK party, it's gone to court.
Yeah, look, I mean, IEC has clear rules and regulation in relation to election. But what they can't do, because South Africa is a constitutional democracy, if a political party is registered through signatures and it's part of the ballot paper, I mean, they can't remove it. Even if they have lower seats in parliament, even if they have one seat, even if their support base is decreasing, I mean, it's few people. I mean, we know parties, I mean, who existed before 1994, but they haven't been getting much support, but they can't be just kicked out. But it's only when they don't meet particular criteria. I mean, as we have seen with the case today in Concord, if they fail to register particular documents, even if they were registered before, they can be kicked out of the system, because there are payments and documents that are also requested to political parties who are already registered, who have been contesting. So if they don't submit some of those documents, they can be kicked out, but political parties can't be kicked out based on the support base or voting system.
So let me use a very extreme scenario. Let's say political party members, based on their regalia and what is found, are at a random SAPS stop found with boxes and boxes of ballot papers with an X next to their party name before the elections, right? So now the X tells us the party, but also these people now confess. Would that party not be disqualified?
Yeah, I mean, this is a contentious issue because, I mean, some of these cases will need to be investigated. Firstly, it's similar to the claim that some political parties submitted fraudulent signatures. I mean, one can make that allegation and then the party is automatically disqualified. And some of these issues might require a clear, incisive investigation before IEC can reach a particular decision. So if that can happen, I mean, that will need to be investigated. I mean, parties might reject that. These are not our people or members and staff. So, I mean, at the center of it, it will require a clear investigation. Also, parties can take IEC to court and defend themselves. So, I mean, an investigation is necessary to IEC to avoid some of that chaos.
The manifestos have been a big topic of conversation with all the different parties setting out their manifestos. What is supposed to be included in a manifesto for it to be a manifesto, or there aren't really rules, parties just kind of put together their own thing?
Yeah, look, I mean, if you read most of the manifestos, I mean, for this coming election, from political parties and independent candidates, I mean, firstly, for political parties, most of their manifesto also comes from their constitutional mandate. Also with independent manifestos, one can see some of their campaigning key points or manifestos or policy intervention that they are proposing if they win election, whether it comes from their constitutional mandate. So, I mean, there is a similarity across all political parties in relation to manifesto. And one will remember that South Africa is still struggling with basic infrastructure. And what is common amongst the independent candidates is that they still are saying in their manifestos that they want to deal away with corruption. They want an accountable, efficient public service. They want to fix PRASA. They want to fix SASA, the healthcare, education, and they want to do away with BEE. They want to ensure that the water crisis and the energy crisis is solved. And also big political parties are saying the same because they know the crisis that South Africans are facing, basic infrastructural problem. I mean, that's what is common amongst the political parties. And one would remember that there's no developmental state without dealing with the basics. You can't create a friendly investment sector or country if you can't deal with the gun violent crime. And one can't talk about a developmental state or economic development if you can't deal with energy crisis, can't deal with water crisis.
Yes, Masxole, we're going to have to leave it there. We'll be back next week on this masterclass. So much to learn. Hit